Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, everybody, it is Wednesday, November the 16th. Yep, Captain, it's only Wednesday. Got to get over hump day. We'll do it together on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. You can also email the show, cale@relevantradio.com, and follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the show account is at Cale Clark Show. But once again, the studio line to call in. If you want to react to any of the stuff we're going to talk about today, if you have another question of another sort, you can call in 888-914-9149. You know, I almost called in during the Drew Mariani show just a few minutes ago just to check on Drew, see if he's okay. His beloved Philadelphia Eagles are no longer undefeated, and they went down to the Washington Commanders Monday Night Football. It was a bit of a shock. I wondered how Drew was doing, and people checked in on me on Sunday after the Bills lost to the Vikings. I wasn't too worried about it. Missing a lot of defensive starters. They'll be okay. They'll be okay. But the 72 Miami Dolphins, still the last and only undefeated team in NFL history. They were popping champagne. They always do this every time the last undefeated loses. And it's gotten pretty tight for them in recent years. Remember the Patriots were undefeated going into the Super Bowl against the Giants the second time? First time, actually, yeah. And Eli threw that crazy pass. He always throws crazy passes. But anyways, having said that, that's not what we're here to talk about today. Although, believe me, I would love to do an entire show on football. Maybe I'll do that one day. Nah, I won't. But it is tempting, though. It is tempting. Well, somebody who is a fan of the Dolphins, of course, is Lucas Holt, our old friend Lucas Holt. And Lucas actually emailed me this morning an interesting article. I didn't know this, but I wanted to share this with you. Huge milestone for planet Earth yesterday. The 8 billionth baby was born yesterday, November the 15th. So Earth now has at least 8 billion people that we know of. And some people are celebrating this. Other people don't think it's such a great thing. But this article that was sent to me was from NPR.org, National Public Radio. And the article was written by Lauren Freyer. And it is really interesting. And apparently, somewhere in the world yesterday, the 8 billionth baby was born. And in fact, the United Nations celebrated yesterday as the quote-unquote day of 8 billion. Now, not everybody is happy about this. Some people think it's a good thing. Some people don't think it's a good thing. I want to hear your thoughts on this. 888-914-9149. So 8 billion babies. And later in the show, I'm going to share with you 16 verses lust. Interesting. Verses against lust that you can have in your back pocket. And of course, what is lust? Well, lust is desire, which God has given us, without the love of God. Sexual desire without the love of God. And of course, this is supposed to be exercised in marriage. And hopefully, that's the ideal. I mean, these babies should be born within marriage. And they're not always born in marriage, unfortunately. But having said that, they are precious lives in God's sight. And we don't know. We don't know which baby exactly was the baby. There's always New Year's babies. You can kind of determine in every city which is the first baby of the New Year's in the hospitals. But we have no way of knowing where this 8 billionth baby was born yesterday. However, good bet that he or she was born in the global south. Now, according to the UN, most of the population growth that's expected in the world between now and the year 2050 is going to come from only 8 countries. It's going to come from only 8 countries. Half of those are in sub-Saharan Africa. The other countries in the group are located in Asia. Now, by the way, right now, the world's most populous country is China. That is going to change, according to forecasting. India is about to overtake China as the world's most populous country. Right now, India has almost 1.4 billion people. with a B. Unbelievable. But believe it or not, India's population growth is actually slowing down. And there's some reasons for this. We'll talk about this in just a second. But the UN is kind of excited about the fact that 8 billion babies have now been born, but they temper that. They temper that with warnings about potential economic inequality, sustainability, and, of course, climate change, environmental damage, quote-unquote. Well, National Public Radio actually had an interview with Andrea Wojnar, who's from the United Nations Population Fund. They're based out of New Delhi, India, and it was an interesting interview. I want to share this with you because some of the stuff that she was talking about, I would agree with. Some of it, I certainly don't, and you probably won't either. So let's just go through this. So she was asked, this is Andrea Wojnar from the United Nations Population Fund, what's the significance of the fact that 8 billion people are now in existence in planet Earth, have been born, many more in existence, of course, in the womb, but she says, well, it's a story of triumph. And it's kind of cool because the fact that there are 8 billion people alive today is really in some ways due to increasing life expectancy. We are living way, way longer than we used to. And Tom Brady, my goodness, he might be playing football when he's 94. I don't know. But we can tend to expect to live longer lives, all things being equal, all things considered. And historically, it hasn't been that way. In Jesus's time, when Jesus was on trial before Caiaphas, the high priest, a lot of movies about Jesus, they'll have this guy as a really old guy with a long white beard. He was probably maybe 50 years old. He might have had white hair at that point. I mean, I'm almost 50, and producer Jim and I were talking about this. Wilford Brimley, when he was in The Natural, the movie The Natural with Robert Redford, Jim's favorite baseball movie, Wilford Brimley was only a couple years older than Robert Redford, but he looked a lot older. At any rate, the high priest Caiaphas was maybe 50 years old. Life expectancy was really low in the first century in Roman Palestine. So if you lived to 50, you were really, really getting up there. Most people would die sooner than that. So things have changed. So the number of human beings who are alive today is more than ever, increasing life expectancy. But also, here's another good thing, declining infant mortality and maternal mortality. Let's face it, in times past, a lot of children would die in childbirth or soon afterwards. Mothers would also die in childbirth or due to complications beforehand that weren't caught by medical means, which we have access to today, so we can really thank technology for that. So less infant mortality, less maternal mortality, longer life expectancy. So that's a good thing because it means that we are progressing in terms of our medical resources and systems. And it's a big deal. It's a big deal. I would say overall, the quality of life is much better in the world than it used to be. Not you know, lots of places that people still struggle. And they're living at subsistence levels and don't have the resources that they need. Now, where is the global population growing the quickest? We talked about that just a moment ago. Most of it is in India right now. So India is going to, next year, according to projections, become the highest population in the world, surpassing China. So right now, India's population is 1.406 billion. China's is 1.448. So India's gaining really quickly. And one of the things that they talk about, I guess, that the UN and governments talk about this, that they want to try to have a country's resources like healthcare, education, jobs match the size of the population. It's not always able to keep pace. It's not always able to keep pace. Now, one of the things that this lady talks about, Andrea, and I'm going to just catch her last name real quick for a second, Andrea Wojnar, one of the things she talks about is that, hey, we've been very successful with family planning, providing information and access for women. Now, I know what she's talking about there. This is the bad kind of family planning, contraception. Of course, abortion access would be part of that as well, no doubt. But don't forget, not all family planning is inherently evil. Speaking of India, Mother Teresa in Calcutta, she and her nuns used to teach women who lived in desperate situations about natural family planning. And that's not a moral evil at all. It's a morally licit way to manage fertility in accord with God's plan. So you can ask me about that if you want. Not that I'm an expert on that, but any stretch of the imagination. But that's what's going on there. And I want to hear what you think about this. There's more to it, but let's go to the phones right now. And you can call in as well, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Janie in Austin, Texas. Hi, Janie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I just called about, I listened to you every day on my way to work and on my way home. So I was driving home and I heard about the 8 billion baby. Why would it be so bad? I mean, why would people think it's something to be alarmed?
I think it's great. You know, Peter Kraft used to say, how can you say there's too many babies? It's like saying there are too many flowers. It doesn't make sense. Now, we're going to get into maybe some of those reasons why people think it's a bad thing. They think it's a drain on the Earth's resources, yada, yada, yada. But I think it's great. There are obviously places in the world where populations are highly concentrated, like Mexico City and places in India like Mumbai. And we know this, but there's a lot of land that's not being used right now that people could move to, like Northern Canada. Anyone? Hello. Most of the population of Canada, of course, lives along the border with the United States. There's a lot of land out there. And you know, of course, I understand why people go to these cities, and you know, there are reasons for that. But there was a real fear back in the 1970s that the world was going to be overpopulated. It was going to decimate all of our resources. And I think one of the great things about people, one of the great tragedies about things like abortion, the plague of abortion in our country and around the world, is that a lot of the problems of the world would have been solved perhaps by people who never had the chance to live. Who knows? Maybe the scientist who would have cured cancer. You never know, right? So there's always solutions to the problems. Humans are incredible at that, and God gives us the wisdom in order to do that. So I just thought it was an interesting article that Lucas sent over, and let's see what else they're saying here in this little piece here. What is the impact of population growth on climate change? This is what Andrea Wojnar was asked about from the United Nations, and she said slower population growth, if it's maintained over decades, can help mitigate environmental degradation. But the majority of the world's population growth is concentrated in poorer countries with significantly lower emissions rates. They're not the ones creating the situation, but in reality, they're the ones having to face the consequences of overconsumption in the West. It's interesting to think about. And I don't know where you come down on this whole, and I don't want to get into necessarily the debate about whether climate change is real or not. I think we can certainly all agree that we should, hopefully we can all agree that we should be good stewards of the environment. And this is something that the popes have talked about, not just Pope Francis. Pope Benedict talked about this a lot, care for the environment. People don't realize that, and so did JP too. So we do have to take care of this gift that God has given us, this planet, and this is our common home, obviously. But, that was an interesting article about the 8 billionth baby that was born. Now, I want to go to this call. This is an interesting topic. I'm glad that you brought this up. Noble is calling from Front Royal, Virginia. Hi, Noble.
Hi. It's really interesting. Elon Musk, the richest man on the planet, said the problem is not overpopulation. The problem is underpopulation, not enough creative human genius to do the great things that God in heaven and human history wants to bring. And I'm one of 14 children. And my uncle put the stealth in the B-2 bomber. Without his genius, we would have great difficulty winning the Cold War in the Soviet Union. And he was one of two children.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. And you were one of 14. And Elon Musk did say that. He did say that. You know, we need more people being born. And when you look at some countries, the population has fallen below replacement levels. I don't know if it's It's probably getting to that point if it hasn't already surpassed that point in the United States. I think that it has. Maybe Patrick Alog, you can confirm that. You're a crack researcher. But in a lot of countries, European countries, the population has fallen below replacement levels. Now, this is interesting because there's a socio-religious aspect to this as well. Our Muslim friends certainly don't have any issue with... They are definitely against contraception, forms of artificial birth control. They were having large families, and it's changing the demographics in places like Europe. And there's really two ways to convert to any faith. You know, somebody can actually go out and convert you, which isn't easy, as we know, or you can be born into it. You can be born into it. And that's the same with Catholicism as well. You can be born into the Catholic faith. It's a lot easier to be born into it than to make a convert, although we should try to do that as well because we believe that it is the truth. So the influence, just naturally speaking, the influence of the faith will wane in any culture where the church is not replacing itself. And so this is why marriage is one of the sacraments of service to the church because, hey, along with holy orders, where do the people come from who are going to receive the sacraments? From marriages, hopefully happy and holy Catholic marriages as well. So yeah, great point by Noble there. Thank you for that call from Front Royal, Virginia. Elon Musk did say that he's been in the news for a lot of reasons. And that's one comment that did get a lot of attention. He said, look, we need to be having more babies essentially. So hey, he's kind of pro-life on that aspect. I don't know. He's got some interesting ideas. And we talked about one time where, not The Onion, but... what's that other? The Babylon Bee. The Babylon Bee guys. Yeah, they kind of buttonholed him a little bit, and had this interview with him, and asked him flat out, "Do you accept Jesus as your Savior?" And I think he was kind of bamboozled by that. I think it was a little bit of entrapment. I think he was gracious about it, but I think Elon's certainly thinking about these issues. He's an intelligent guy, obviously. So we need to pray for him and. Need to pray for everybody. So anyways, intriguing. So 8 billion of us now on this blue planet. Really cool. And hey, I don't think 8 billion people are listening to the show right now, but maybe millions of you are. And you can certainly call in right now. 888-914-9149 is Cale Clark Show. It's also your show. So call in with your question or comment. And we'll be right back after the break. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call for the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to get back to the phones in just a second. I want to remind you of this really fun series that I'm doing on the Faith Explained program. It's called Old Covenant Controversies. There are all these issues. We all have issues, right? But a lot of people have issues with the Old Testament. And whether they're spiritual seekers or convinced believers alike, they have a real question with really four problems that come up in the text. Number one, how does the Bible relate to science, especially when it comes to creation and evolution? We talked about that already. If you missed those episodes, you can get them on relevantradio.com or through the app or wherever you get your podcast. Share them with a friend. It's a quick series. It's an 8-episode series, so 2 episodes for each topic. Topic number 2, which we're right in the middle of, we'll finish it off tomorrow. History. Did this stuff really happen? And does it even matter? We're talking about the Exodus. We're talking about the conquest of the land. Then we're going to talk about God and violence. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of killing. There's a lot of bloodshed in the Old Testament. And it makes people think that maybe God is a moral monster, or maybe the God of the Old Covenant is a different God than the God of Jesus Christ. You know, a lot of people in the church used to think that. Now, they were wrong, but we'll explain that as well. Then the last topic is sexuality and the Bible and the Old Testament. Is God and his teaching completely out of touch with the modern world? Or maybe the modern world might be a little off base. I don't know. I think it might be the latter. But anyways, we'll talk about that. And I want to, speaking of, you know, marriage and all that sort of stuff, well, guess what? That's where babies come from. That's what I'm told. And the 8 billionth baby on planet Earth was born yesterday somewhere in the world. Probably in the sub-Saharan world, we're not quite sure, maybe in Asia somewhere, but we don't know. But apparently now there are 8 million of us on planet Earth, so I asked you guys what you thought about it. And let's go back to the phones right now. Joe is calling from Northwest Indiana. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I wanted to comment on what you said about natural family planning. I do understand that the church has given the green light to use it, that it's morally licit, and I know that Pius the 12th gave the okay for the rhythm method. However, nobody can deny that it's, well, people can deny it, but it's obvious to me that the message is still the same. It's limit the size of your family. The fewer, the better. And I know people make excuses and they say, well, NFP can also be used to regulate fertility and can help you have even more babies. But I think we should stop kidding ourselves. And I'm making somewhat of a public confession. I had, from the same woman, 9 kids. Yeah, we were married. We got a divorce and I got an annulment, but just the same, just as I see NFP used as a, also we, my wife had 2 miscarriages. So we're talking about 11 souls that were created altogether there. But the message is still the same. It's just not really verbalized like that. And just as I feel that NFP is abused as a Catholic form of birth control, annulments are also abused as a Catholic divorce. And I had one too, and I have serious doubts about the validity of my annulment. I think in the eyes of God, I'm still married to that woman. And so that's just something that I wrestle with, but it's just somewhat of a public confession that I'm making. That's basically it.
Well, hey, Joe, thanks for calling in. I really appreciate the call. You talked about a couple different issues there, annulments and NFP, natural family planning. It's also called an NFA by some, natural fertility awareness. That really hasn't caught on. Most people still call it NFP. And okay, so let's tackle the last thing that you said first when you're talking about annulments. And you mentioned that you had an annulment from your first marriage and you're questioning even whether or not that was legit. Well, one of the reasons why Holy Mother Church is there is so that we might submit our intellect to Holy Mother Church. And that doesn't mean that we're putting our brains on the shelf. And that's true with theological truths as well. But it's actually the wisest thing to do, because the church has breadth and depth of knowledge and years and centuries of experience that we don't have. And I mentioned to a lot of you guys before that I once went to a talk that was given by a canon lawyer who was working in a marriage tribunal in a certain diocese in a big city that I won't name. But he said that when he started working on annulment cases, you know, he'd just become a canon lawyer. He's like, I'm going to deal with this whole annulment problem. I think the church grants way too many annulments. I think people are treating annulments like Catholic divorces, and it's just become way too easy. I'm going to put a stop to it. And then he said, I actually started working on the cases, and that completely changed my mind. And it shocked him. It shocked him. He actually said, man, I'm not even sure the church grants enough annulments. Not that he's looking for this to happen by any stretch of the imagination, but he's just saying, man, it just blew him away how many truly invalid marriages there actually were. Because in so many cases, the people just did not have the formation, they didn't have the knowledge or the freedom for what they were actually agreeing to. And of course, that's the whole reason behind the four parts of the marriage vow in the Catholic Church. You know, have you come here freely? Love has to be free. It can't be coerced. It can't be your future mother-in-law who's making you do this at gunpoint. No, no, you have to freely choose to commit your life to this person. Have you come here freely in order to give yourselves without reserve to one another? In other words, you give yourself totally. And then the third question is, do you promise to be faithful unto death? And some people kind of, you know, say that with their fingers crossed behind their backs, and they have no intention of being faithful. They got a side piece and maybe two going on, and that's just something that they agree to with their lips, but their hearts are in a different place. And then, of course, the last one is to do with fertility, to do with the gift of life. Will you accept children as a gift from God, and will you raise them according to the laws of Christ and His Church? The promise to be fruitful. So free, total, faithful, and fruitful. I remember reading a letter about this, you know, from the Canadian bishops. They talked about this. This is really what love is, free, total, faithful, and fruitful. And of course, this mirrors the love of Christ for His bride, the Church, on the cross. He gives His life freely. He says, hey, I lay my life down of my own free will. He says that in John's Gospel. Nobody takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own free will. It's not so much that Judas is betraying me or that the Roman soldiers are nailing me to the cross. I am choosing to do this. I could choose otherwise. I could call down 12 legions of angels and just smite everybody, but that's not what I'm doing here. So love has to be free. Has to be total. This is my body given for you. He gave it all. Body, blood, soul, and divinity. He gives Himself to us in the Eucharist as well. But He didn't hold anything back. Is His love faithful? Yeah, I will be with you to the very end of the age. Last thing He says in Matthew 28 before He ascends into heaven. And is His love for His bride, the Church, fruitful? Absolutely. In John chapter 10, Jesus says, the thief, speaking of the devil, comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come so that you might have life and have it to the full. And so the baptismal font is the womb of Holy Mother Church. How many billions of us have been born again through baptism? That's really what being born again means, into the one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church, born naturally through our human parents, born supernaturally in the Church through the font of baptism. And so a lot of people, when they do enter into marriage, they're not in line with those four questions. And so if one of the answers to that those questions is no, then you don't have a valid marriage. And of course, the annulment cases, they're not really concerned with what happens 10, 15 years down the line. It goes back to the beginning of the marriage. And it's what was happening. Was a valid marriage contracted at the beginning, covenanted at the beginning? That's really the question. So if there was an annulment case, and it seems that there was in your case, I would say, I mean, my advice would be, don't try to outsmart Holy Mother Church on this and think, well, maybe I got it wrong. And well, you just give it to God. I mean, you can't go back in time anyway. So just give the situation to God and try to live your present situation to the glory of God as best you can. And so that's what you can do. Ask for His grace. Now, to this question of NFP, and I think Joe brings up a good point when he called in from Northwest Indiana. Joe was saying that a lot of Catholics treat NFP basically like Catholic birth control or Catholic contraception. And I would agree with you that many people do. Many people do. But just because it is abused in certain cases doesn't mean that it's not morally legit. And it's all about the intent. It's all about the intent, isn't it? And so this is what the Church says, for a serious reason. Now, the default position should be openness to the gift of life. But the Church says, for a serious reason, a couple might determine that, well, this isn't the best time for us to have a family. Now, what might a serious reason be? I don't know. The Church has never given, okay, here's the 50 reasons that are serious, and here's the 150 reasons that aren't good enough, you know. Well, I can't afford to have another kid because, you know, I have a chance to buy season tickets to the Chicago Bears. And somebody might say, don't spend money on that. But no, I mean, no, that's not, or I want a big screen TV. And if I have another kid, I won't be able to afford that new micro dot LED TV. No, that's not a good reason either. Okay, so these are things you have to sort out. What's a legit reason? Now, if one of you has terminal cancer, that's a different story. So what's a serious reason? This is something that you have to pray about, think about. speak to the Lord about, hopefully you have a spiritual director, talk to that person as well. And so that's something that you have to work out in your conscience. But again, it's not Catholic contraception because you're not doing anything wrong. You're not doing anything. You're just abstaining from relations at a fertile time. Now, again, and you touched on this too, Joe, in your call, that it can actually help people who are trying to conceive. But, and this is not the rhythm method. You mentioned the rhythm method. This is not the rhythm method. And a lot of people are confused about that. I got rhythm. Okay. So the rhythm method was kind of an unscientific way of trying to deal with fertility in the past. But NFP, and again, Mother Teresa taught this to people who didn't have a lot of financial and economic resources on the streets of Calcutta, India. This is a scientific method of fertility awareness, which can help you to actually achieve pregnancy if that's what you're looking for. You know, there's it's amazing. I've talked to students about this. I've talked to adults about this. I've given talks about the theology of the body. And sometimes I'll ask people, hey, how many times in a month can a woman get pregnant? You wouldn't believe how many people raise their hands and say, you know, 5 or, you know, 6 or 4 or 3. No, a woman can only get pregnant one time in her cycle. And so this is grade 8 biology, hopefully, but not the case for everybody. You know, it's true. And so if you are trying to achieve pregnancy, then you know that this is the time. So I won't be too, I don't want to go into more detail than that. But having said that, it's not contraception, because contraception is something completely different. That is trying to thwart the natural purposes and consequences of the union between husband and wife. And yeah, there's a lot of issues regarding that. We could do a whole show on that, but we'll maybe get into that another time. But Joe, thank you very much for your call. I hope that was helpful in some way. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you. Let's go now to Richard in Lakewood, California. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Mr. Clark. Hi. I was just calling in about the population and the recent number of 8 billion. I'm just disappointed. A lot of people are not aware of the science behind population. And decades ago, there was a book, The Population Bomb, that was long since refuted. But 5, 6, 7 years ago, Popular Science actually published an article. And they approach it from science and other types, but not pure science, where they had studied what could the planet hold as far as population. And there was 3 methods: managed growth, where you had a controlled society, controlled resources, a random, and another type I don't recall, but... On the low end, the planet they found could handle 250 billion people.
Wow.
On the high end, 1 trillion.
1 trillion. And, wow.
And part of that, if you realize, we actually do have unlimited energy, and that's nuclear. And
yeah,
people
that's right.
have been people have been sort of brainwashed into being so fearful of using nuclear power, but when you factor in the dangers from drilling, from shipping, from train loads, accidents, using the conventional petrochemical and other sources of energy, nuclear power is much safer. The accidents, the main ones, you know, we all know about
Chernobyl,
overblown, and the actual deaths are much fewer. And I think that, you know, it's kind of sad that so many young people have bought into this overpopulation, and that abortion is their right. And they're the linchpin of the family. And I don't hear much about that, you know, having children and having families is talked about much at our churches. And that's also that disappoints me when I myself completely understand that the world is actually underpopulated. We can have cities in the desert if we wanted to. There's just not enough people.
That's really interesting, Richard. Yeah, so you're bringing up a lot of countercultural takes here, that the world is actually not populated enough. And that's something that maybe needs to be talked about a little bit more, obviously, in these discussions. And then this whole idea of nuclear power, this is not necessarily a forum to debate the merits of what might make for the best power grid. But nuclear power is something that maybe isn't talked about enough, because it is a source of clean energy. And it's a technology that does get a bad rap because of the events of what happened at Chernobyl. And yeah, another thing too, as Musk talks about, Elon Musk, hey, there's a pretty free source of energy up there in the sky. It's called the sun. Maybe we should harness it. So solar energy is obviously becoming a big thing. Tesla itself is getting into the solar business, the power walls and solar. And a lot of people during the recent hurricanes that happened in Florida, they were able to keep power because of that, because of solar. And so I think there's obviously, that's the way things are going. It'll be interesting to see if nuclear power once again becomes on vogue, and people can kind of get over the stigma. In fact, where I live, not too far from me, there's a big nuclear power plant that's, been running for quite a while. And hey, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm no expert. I'm no policy wonk, that's for sure. I'm not even Willy Wonka, but I am hosting the show, and I'd love to hear from you. 888-914-9149. Well, as I promised you, I'm going to be sharing with you 16 verses that you can keep in your pocket, share them with a friend who might be struggling. If anybody's struggling with lust, this is really helpful, and I think you'll like this. 888-914-9149. Be right back right after this.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
I always feel like I'm in a 1980s video game when I hear that music. I love it. I love it. Tecmo Bowl. And if you use Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl, no one can ever beat you. Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of people are fighting a battle of another sort, and it has to do with technology, not Tecmo Bowl, not that stuff, and it's certainly not a game. It's the epidemic of lust in the culture. Now, this is something that's always been part of the human experience we have to fight against, but because of the proliferation of pornography in the culture, and everybody having a smartphone in their pocket, and tragically, even the very, very young getting exposed at earlier and earlier ages, it's an important thing to try to refute and try to fight against. And so I'm going to be sharing with you 16 verses from the Bible to help fight against lust. 16 verses, get it? Lust. All right, now what is lust? It's good to define that. Lust is sexual desire devoid of the love of God. That's how one writer described it. Because obviously this desire is a gift of God. He created it. Marriage was his idea. And so what we really want is to avoid the distortions of true love. And this is really where Satan does try to trick us, because he can't create anything. He's not that powerful. All he can do is try to take the good things that God created and try to get us to misuse them. And disordered goods is a really good way to describe sin. Disordered goods. He can't create anything. He can only try to get you to abuse the good things of God's creation in the wrong way, the wrong time, wrong person, that kind of thing. And so here's some verses here that might be able to help you. And probably the first one to go to is from the Sermon on the Mount, from Matthew's Gospel. You might want to write this down. Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 to 30. Jesus says this: "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you, that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell." All right, so let me just break that down a little bit here. So much to say about this, but actually tomorrow on The Faith Explained, during our Q&A mailbag session, somebody asked me a question about the Ten Commandments and how do they relate in the modern age. Well, I, One of the things I like to say is that the Ten Commandments have to do mostly with outer activities, things that we should not do, avoid the actions. But Jesus' teaching gets to the heart of the matter. So that's why he goes into what are called the antitheses in the Sermon on the Mount. You have heard that it was said, but I say to you. Thesis, antithesis. So Jesus goes back to the commandment against adultery. He says, hey, you know you're not supposed to do this, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So as Pope John Paul II once said about this in his Theology of the Body, we read these words and we think, well, who can be saved then, right? Who hasn't done this at some point, fallen prey to lust? And so we say, what's the difference between admiring beauty and lust? Well, I think some of this we sort of know. Someone once said, you know, you know pornography when you see it. You know, at a certain level, that's true. I remember the Protestant evangelist Billy Graham once quipped, and I don't know if this is a funny joke or not, but he was once asked, how do you know if it's lust? He says, well, if you look twice, it's lust. So make the first look count. All right. And so I think he was kidding there. But having said that, Jesus really wants to look at the inside. If the Ten Commandments are sort of, if you think of a peanut, the Ten Commandments are the shell, the outer act, the outer behavior. And Jesus wants to get at the nut on the inside. Most of us are a little bit nuts on the inside. So it's about the intent, right? Anyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And so John Paul II said this, are we to fear the severity of these words or have confidence in their salvific power, in their saving power? So this might seem pretty bad, but if you think about it, God would never command us to do something that wasn't in our power to do. So he's going to give us the power to do it. He's going to enable us to change our heart, our inner eye, so that we recognize, you know, for the guys out there, we recognize ladies out there as sisters in Christ, as children of God, daughters of the King. And so we need to respect them. And the same is true for women as well. They can fall into this trap too. Now tragically, Jesus is using hyperbole here. Some people have read him literally. I once read the story about a young boy who was struggling with lust, and he actually did tear his eye out. He did literally tear his right eye out when he read this verse. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. That's a tragic misunderstanding of Jesus' words. What he's basically saying is you need to deal with this. You need to deal with the root of this, and you need to take drastic action. But don't hurt yourself, for goodness sakes. Don't harm yourself. Don't mutilate yourself. That would be sinful, obviously. He's just saying, deal with the sin, okay? Don't put it on the shelf. Don't think, oh, I can never be holy. And no, God will help you. God will help you. So that's the first verse. And number two, 16 verses versus lust that you can turn to. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 18 to 20. St. Paul writes, flee from sexual immorality. It's a little bit like Joseph, right? In the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, and she grabbed him by his technicolor dream coat and said, lie with me, and he ran right out of his coat and ran away with no clothes on. So that's St. Paul says, flee from sexual immorality. Don't try to be a hero. Run. This is the one time when turning tail and running is the brave thing to do. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. Glorify God in your body. And so, really what St. Paul says, he uses this example of redemption, how Christ has freed us from slavery to sin, and now we get to be servants of Christ. The actual word is slaves of Christ. St. Paul always introduces himself as a slave of Jesus Christ. I used to be a slave to sin. Now I'm a slave to Jesus Christ, and he's the one who has set us free. So he ransomed us. He paid for us to get out of jail. And so we belong to him now. We can't just do whatever we want. But the good thing is he's going to lead us to the truth about ourselves and about other people. All right, number three, 16 verses versus impurity versus lust. Romans chapter 13, verse 14. St. Paul writes, put on the Lord Jesus Christ, make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. And this is why we give baptismal robes to people during the Easter Vigil or at baptisms. We give them this pure white robe. Now, why is that? It's the concept, the image of putting on Christ, the new life in Christ. Now, when St. Paul says, make no provision for the flesh, a lot of people misunderstand that. It's probably a bad translation. What he's really talking about there is the sinful nature. Okay, it's not the flesh. In terms of the human body is not bad, it's not evil. A lot of people think that it is. No, the body is created by God. We're going to keep our bodies. We're going to get them back at the resurrection. God said it was very, very good. This is my idea, he says. So when St. Paul talks about flesh, he's not talking about the body being bad. He talks about sinful flesh. He's talking about the sinful human nature. That's probably a better translation from the original Greek. So this is the unredeemed part of us. This is the part of even after original sin is wiped away in baptism, guess what? We're still, because of our wounded human nature, we're still drawn to it even after baptism. That's why there's the sacrament of confession. So that's what we've got to try to avoid, okay? All right, number four, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22. St. Paul writes to Timothy, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. I like that. Now, he also could have said this. There was another place where he writes to Timothy saying, hey, don't let anybody look down on you because you're young, but set an example for the believers in life, love, and speech, and purity, and faith. So you don't have to wait till you're older to try to become a saint. You can become a saint right now. So if you're listening as a young person, understand that. You purity is possible with Christ. Number five, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 to 24. Paul writes this. He says, now I say and testify in the Lord that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. They become callous, have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. And there's so much of that out there in the culture, isn't there? But he says, that is not the way you learned Christ, assuming you have heard about him and were taught in him, as the truth is in Jesus. Put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds. Put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. All right, number six, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 to 5. Paul writes, for this is the will of God, your sanctification. So you want to know what God's will is? It's that you become holy. That's what that means, to become a saint. That's the will of God. He wants you to become a saint. He says that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. Psalm 119, that's the seventh verse. This is always a good psalm. Psalm 19, verses 9 to 11, it says, how can a young man keep his way pure? By guarding it according to your word. With my whole heart I seek you. Let me not wander from your commandments. I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. So that's an important thing to do. Read the scriptures a lot. And if you find one of these verses, you know, just memorize that verse and kind of hide the word in your heart. And sometimes when you're in a situation, a verse will come back at you. And the Holy Spirit will remind you of this. And it'll be what you need at times to say, oh, yeah, this, I shouldn't do this. Shouldn't go down this road. I've got to store up your word in my heart, Lord, that I might not sin against you. All right, number eight, James 5:16. It says, therefore, confess your sins to one another. Pray for one another that you might be healed. Obviously, the sacrament of confession is huge because not only do we get our sins forgiven, we get power, strength, grace to avoid those sins in the future, to fight against them. We might fall into it again, but we'll receive more power for the battle. And with God's grace, we will eventually overcome. Number nine, Colossians 3:5. Paul writes, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Number 10, Romans 6, verses 11 to 14. There's a whole passage here, but I just want to focus on this one verse. He says, let not sin, therefore, reign in your mortal body to make you obey its passions. Do not present your members to sin as instruments for unrighteousness. But actually, in some translations, it says, present your members to sin, or sorry, don't present your members to sin as weapons for unrighteousness, but present yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life, and present your members to God, the parts of your body, as weapons of righteousness. I like that. I like that. For sin will have no dominion over you, since you are not under law, but under grace. Number 11, Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, anything worthy of praise, think about these things. I think a lot of the battle for purity is just replacing the bad thoughts with good thoughts. Always try to think about Our Lady. It's very, very, she is such a great resource. She can help you to fight against lust, remain pure. If you're thinking about Our Lady, who's so pure, that will replace all the bad thoughts. So lean on her for protection. Stay under her mantle. Psalm 119, verse 37, we talked about that psalm before. Turn my eyes from looking at worthless things and give me your life in your ways. Hebrews 4, chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. This is a good one. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who is in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. So he can help us, Jesus. Matthew 5, 8, blessed are the pure in heart, one of the Beatitudes. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Number 15, 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 through 16. He talks about being sober-minded. As he who called you is holy, be holy in all your conduct, for I am holy. And then the last one, Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. Hey, the problem with the living sacrifice, you can always crawl off the altar. Don't do it. Stay loyal. I'll be back on The Cale Clark Show tomorrow. Take care. God bless you. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.